It's our absolute privilege to welcome back to the show the Director of Infectious Disease Epidemiology, Prevention, and Control Division of the Minnesota Department of Health. It's Kristen Ehresmann. She's kind enough to join us today to talk about the latest status of the epidemic here in Minnesota. Director, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm happy to be with you.
It's happy to have you back. It's always nice to talk. You make me feel better. these are tough times. I appreciate your informational hug that you give us.
Well, oh, good. What would you like information on today?
Well, let's start off with obviously September had brought two things which were always going to be a concern. You had talked about it, I think, the last time you were on the air with us, and one was the state fair, and two is the return to schools. And as we have seen, both of them have led to more cases of coronavirus in the state of Minnesota. I guess maybe because we've been tracking, I know you guys have been doing some tracking there of the state fair numbers. It doesn't seem like it. I mean, we definitely have a few hundred cases that have been linked directly to the state fair, but it didn't seem as it was as bad as we were anticipating. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, yes and no, I guess. We've had about 318 cases associated with the state fair, 5 hospitalizations. So, you know, when we look at the straight numbers, it seems like, oh, that's not so bad. I think what's concerning to us is that, you know, when our teams are doing outreach and, you know, working to interview cases, we know that at any time, our surveillance data are undercounts, that we never reach complete case ascertainment. But we also know that, you know, we're not able to reach about 50% of the cases at this point. And then many of the cases that we talk to are not willing to give us information about their activities. So I think it's important to keep in mind that, you know, while the absolute number doesn't seem as high as you might think, it's definitely, in our estimation, very much an undercount. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, again, not to be negative, Nelly, but, you know, we've talked about how with the Delta variant, that variant is so much more transmissible than what we saw with the wild type or even the Alpha. And so the R-naught, or the number of people that, you know, on average, a case of Delta will infect, is 7. So when you look at even that lower number than you'd expect to see for the state fair, for the second generation, that would result in, you know, 2,191 cases. And then the next time you have a generation, it goes up to over 15,000, 15,337. So it's just kind of a reminder that one, a single case is not just a single case. It kind of represents what it could spread to. And then just recognizing that we know that the cases that are reported to us and that we know about really represent an undercount of what's really out there.
And if I heard you correctly, you said the best guess is about probably only 50% of the cases you've been able to track. Is that the right number?
Right. And then of those, probably, you know, half again tell us, you know, what they actually were doing or actually are forthcoming. So, you know, you could really do some multiplication if you wanted to estimate what was really out there. So I think the important message is really, you know, those large group gatherings continue to be really risky, even if they are outside. And so that's something that people need to think about as they're, you know, contemplating the ability to do a lot more fun things now. Just think about your own risk, your vaccination status, and, you know, is that something you want to be participating in? And maybe if you do, you want to be wearing a mask.
The other major issue in September was schools, and the school system started back up. We had many school districts with mask mandates, but a lot of them didn't. Talk a little bit about it, because these numbers that we've seen coming out of the schools have been fairly disturbing to a point, as we're seeing these numbers multiply, as we're getting more and more reports, especially in schools without mask mandates, of COVID outbreaks in some of these school districts.
Right. I mean, we are really concerned about what we're seeing in the school setting. We are getting a lot of reports of cases. So, for instance, we've had many 3,431 case reports that were submitted to us from schools over the last 7 days.
Wow.
And of course we check those reports, and this is what the schools, you know, have information on. And then we check that against the laboratory data and things like that. But that's a huge number of reports. And when you look at the number of close contacts in the last 7 days, we're talking about over 44,000 close contacts that come as a result of those cases. So, you know, we are definitely very concerned about what's happening in the school setting. And I think, you know, we fully recognize that it's really important for kids to be able to be learning in person and be in the classroom as much as possible. You know, and what's different this year is last year we had the safe learning plan in place. So there were mandated mitigation strategies that schools needed to follow. And what we're seeing this year is the Department of Health put out some pretty clear guidance about what schools should be doing to make the school setting as safe as possible. But many, many of them are choosing not to follow that guidance. It's a local decision. We don't have the authority at this point to mandate anything. So we have plenty of tools. I mean, we have vaccine for our adolescents, 12 to 17. Teachers obviously can all be vaccinated. Masking is what we recommend. Social distancing, you know, making sure that sick kids stay home and that exposed kids are quarantined and that there's contact tracing. But we know that's not happening in many, many places. And so that just contributes to the spread. And we're certainly hearing from parents in those areas expressing concern.
And
but as I said, it's too late. A local issue.
And we should also mention the danger to the staff. And I mean, we mentioned this in the way, because people always think about school as students, but we've had, you know, numerous staff members getting sick now in these school districts as well. Is it easier to trace with a school because obviously the nature of school, you know, if you have to call in to attendance line and, you know, they have a way of, you know, and I know most attendance lines are saying, hey, we're trying to track down what exactly your kid has here. So we need to, you know, inform others. Is it been easier with the school districts to track this because of the nature of it being a school district?
Yes. I mean, that certainly helps. Although, you know, many parents are, one of the challenges is that there are many situations in which parents are sending sick kids to school. Ugh. So, you know, kids may be positive or may be ill and they're still sent to school. So that's part of the challenge is, that, you know, not only is it that the school needs to identify cases, but the fact that kids who are ill need to stay home. So there are many, many things at play, and it's definitely, you know, a very, an issue that people feel very strongly about. Mm-hmm. But just to put it in perspective, when we look at the case numbers that we're seeing right now and compare them to where we were at a year ago, I mean, we are at 3 and 4 times as many cases right now as we were a year ago. And like I said, part of that is because we're not able to enforce having mitigation measures in place, and because, you know, not everyone who can be vaccinated has chosen to do so.
One of the most frustrating parts about your job right now is that you're just trying to give out information, and there are a lot of people that try to turn this political. And I actually got into a bit of a discussion with a friend of mine who is like, there's no guidance. I said, what are you talking about? I mean, there's a lot of things that you guys, guidelines you're putting out. But of course, the main ones, wear masks, get vaccinated, socially distance, limit your amount, you're around people without other masks on. You know, it's, you guys have been straightforward on this. It's just, it seems like that's always the uphill battle. I mean, you have a fairly, I mean, if I can say, simplistic set of rules to follow here, and people are just choosing not to, and it's got to be frustrating.
Yeah, it is a little bit frustrating. And just to kind of clarify, I think I think what happened for a lot of people in the public is that, you know, when the governor had his emergency powers and when there were executive orders in place, you know, that was a mandate for people that they had to follow. And for a lot of people, they forgot that in the hundreds of years up until that point, or maybe not, maybe we shouldn't use hundreds because there've probably been other times in the past, but in the many, many years up until that, the public health department, we didn't put out, you know, executive orders or mandates like that. We had guidance and people followed it. But now there's this feeling like, well, if it isn't mandated in law, you know, or there's not some special governor mandate, it must not be real or it must not be there. So yes, we, for instance, we have very clear guidance on what schools should be doing, the mitigation steps they should take, the tools and things they should have in place. So it's not that we haven't told them, but it is at this point, in the absence of emergency powers, it is a local decision. And so many of them are choosing not to follow that guidance.
The Director of Infectious Disease Epidemiology Prevention and Control Division at the Minnesota Department of Health is Chris Ayersman. She's kind enough to join us once again. Director, I've looked at some of the numbers here. You look at these counties, and indeed, where you're having, I mean, it's a science, you know, lesson, really, you know, and a math lesson, where you have people who are getting vaccinated, you have lower rates of infection. Where you have people who are not vaccinated, you're having higher rates of infection. We've got a big problem out there, especially when you look at the central part of the state, the west central part of the state, parts of the northern part, and of course, the very southern tier. There are some counties here that have a fairly astronomical amounts of infection rates.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things to keep in mind is that, you know, certainly there's our data, but if you look at data at the national level, it all speaks to the fact that, you know, these mitigation strategies that we are promoting make a difference. So for instance, just the idea, the topic of masking in our schools, you know, CDC looked at data and you know, can say that schools without a mask requirement were three and a half times more likely to have outbreaks compared with schools that had mask requirements, you know, starting the year. There have been lots of communities, for instance, where masking was instituted. And, you know, it made a big difference in terms of transmission in those communities. So, yeah, we definitely have the information mm-hmm. that tells us what we ought to be doing and what will help prevent disease. But sometimes that is not accepted, and so we're not seeing communities act on it. And then obviously we see the impact with disease.
I'm with you. I the frustration I have been saying for a year now, I don't want you dead, I don't want you sick, and I don't want you bankrupt for the next 10 years with medical bills. And people say, you know, it's kind of hard when you say it so bluntly, and people said, I'm on the opposite side of you. And you're like, really? Okay. That doesn't make, you know, it's frustrating. And I know for you, it's a daily frustrating thing. There is a little bit of, you know, developing good news. I mean, the booster shot has been approved. It sounds like pretty much every state's kind of doing their own thing here. Talk about that in Minnesota, because obviously the elderly, once again, getting their booster shot, first line personnel, I imagine medical personnel trying to get that booster shot if they need it. But I think for a lot of people that have already been vaccinated, they're like, sure, you want me to give me a booster? I'll take it in a heartbeat. I will, for sure.
Yeah, so just to kind of summarize that, so the FDA-approved booster shots, it's just for the Pfizer vaccine, though. I want to be clear that it's just for those individuals that receive the Pfizer vaccine. The good news is with Moderna, we don't see that same kind of waning, although they do have data in with the FDA, and Johnson & Johnson also has looked at booster data, so that is likely going to be coming. But FDA approved the boosters, and then the CDC, ACIP recommended boosters. So we have kind of four categories. We have people 65 and older or in long-term care, and they should get a booster. We have people 50 to 64 who have an underlying health condition. They should get a booster. And these boosters are recommended 6 months after your second dose.
Okay.
And to be clear, you don't have to get there within hours of your 6 month time frame. You know, it just, I mean, you've got protection. you know, we're talking about a little bit of a waning in protection, not that you don't have protection at all. So just to kind of, you know, in terms of the panic level, keep it in perspective. And then the other two groups, we have 18 to 49 with underlying health conditions. That's more of a permissive recommendation. They can get a booster. They're encouraged to talk to their healthcare provider. And the same is true for those with potential for occupational exposures and greater risk due to occupation. That's also permissive, and they can, get a booster. And the idea is to kind of check in and, you know, have a conversation. But yes, boosters are now authorized for the Pfizer vaccine. And so that's exciting. Of course, we still want to make sure that those folks who haven't gotten their first doses are vaccinated, but exciting that we have boosters.
Get vaccinated, please, by all means, if you can. It's a piece of cake, and I'll tell you what, it's just the stress relief you'll get with getting vaccinated is an amazing feeling. I know that they still need to work on the FDA approval for 5 to 12 year olds on that one vaccine, correct?
Yes. So Pfizer has their data in to the FDA for 5 to 11 year olds, and what we've heard is that, you know, there's been talk like, could there be an approval by the end of October or beginning of November? So we'll be waiting to see if that comes through. That will be very exciting, because then there will be an option for our elementary age kids, and so that'll make a difference. And then certainly, the more people we get vaccinated throughout the whole population, the bigger difference that makes.
Indeed. Hopefully that comes soon. One final thing that actually doesn't have to do with COVID per se, but I do want to make sure I get you to mention as well. It's flu season. We generally, last year, once again, there was this big campaign saying, okay, you know, COVID's out there, but you still need to get your flu shot. Once again, people need to, as we get into the flu season here, they need to get their flu shot this fall, regardless of whether or not they think they need it or not. They need to get that, correct?
Yes, absolutely. I've already had mine. The reason that it's really important that you get your flu shot, we always recommend it. But a couple things. One is we virtually saw no influenza last year because of all the mitigation that we had in place for COVID. Those measures, masking, social distancing, you know, capacity limits, all of those things make a difference for all of our respiratory illnesses. So it really helped for flu. We don't have that this year. And we also, people didn't get exposed to flu last year, so we don't have any of that kind of natural immunity that's out there either. So it's really important that you get a flu shot and take advantage of that, because think about it, our healthcare system is really stressed with what we're seeing with COVID. And we know that when flu season hits, we stress our healthcare system out because of influenza. We don't want to have those two things happening simultaneously. So definitely get a flu shot.
I say this every time you come on, Director. I'm going to say it again. I'm very thankful personally, and I think if I can speak for a lot of other people, I think what you guys over there at the Department of Health have done has been God's work. Commissioner Malcolm, yourself, everyone there, I have been so impressed with your organization and what you have done to prevent this from being like a Texas or a Florida or some of these other states, Missouri, where they went off the cliff early this year. You guys have done a wonderful job. I know it's incredibly stressful. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you very much. I think you guys are just wonderful.
Well, thank you so much. And I'll pass that on to the team, and glad to have joined you today.
My pleasure. Director Kristen Ehresmann, the Infectious Disease Epidemiology Prevention and Control Division Director, kind enough to join us today. Director, thanks once again. Hopefully we'll talk to you before too long, okay?
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.